Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Happy Wednesday night. Happy hump day. This is Sports Tonight brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters in Vandenberg, Pennsylvania. When you purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. Frank, hope you made it safe. Hope everything's okay, Frank.
Yeah, Tommy, one more time for a public service announcement. Please, when you're out there on the road, there's other people out on the road, please do not text. We just had a horrific accident on 75 just north of the Charlotte County line that was involving four cars, five or six people now in the hospital. One extremely serious was flown to Tampa General, and it was caused by a gentleman texting while he was driving. Please, please, for everybody, for the sake of God, do not text when you drive.
Thank you. Thanks. That's a great thing. I mean, Frank got off the side of the road in Texas, and he said, "Well, they can't." They text me. Well, wait till I get to my place of destination up there. That is what you do right there, Frank. I mean, that's great. But sad day in Philadelphia. on Sunday afternoon. Oh boy, what are the papers saying up in Philadelphia right now? I can hardly imagine. We go play the Giants tomorrow night. So then Eagles are off for a while. But boy, that was. I don't know what team shows up half the time with the Eagles. Let's put it this way. I'm not going to write this to Nick or anything. Text this to Nick. The Cleveland Browns are 2-2-1, while the Eagles are 2-3. Oh boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh boy, 2-2-1. But it's okay. I mean, we can survive this. We survived 40 years of bad football in the '60s and '70s. So we'll have survived that. I think you hate to see it, but they have to win Sunday. They have to win on tomorrow night in New York against a very tough quarterback, Eli Manning. And Beckham Jr. had another fantastic game. But, you know, the Eagles are dinking and dunking, but Frank is nothing working out. I mean, there's no running game, passing game, or is this dink and dunk? They try to get the split ends going for 100 yards down the field, but you don't do that in that kind of defense. The Giants showed on Sunday. I mean, not the Giants, but the Vikings showed on Sunday. No pass rush at all. Nothing at all by the Eagles. And, oh boy, it was not a pretty sight. When Washington's winning that division at 3-1, it's not pretty right now. So let's hope better things happen in New York. Let's pray for the miracle of Meadowlands. Frank will tell folks about the miracle of the Meadowlands. Funny story, right? We're coming back from Bloomsburg to see the sponsor of the show, Nick. We're coming back there, and here it is. Eagles fumble. The Giants had the ball. We go through the Lehigh Valley Tunnel, and we heard Merle Reese at the end of the opening. Touchdown, Eagles. I said to myself, what in the heck happened? Herman Edwards picked up that ball for an Eagles touchdown. Pasarchi tried to hand off to Larry Zonka. Now, when Herman Edwards was coach of the Bucks, and I said to Herman, thank God for that play in 78. He said, no, way there. I was stuck under a tunnel. I didn't hear it. And he said, anyway, a nice talk, diehard Eagles fan, and that's all they know. But no, a lot of stuff going on in the world of sports right now. So, I mean, the World Series is coming real close, and the Indians take another dive. And the Dodgers and Brewers are on they won their series. But the other one, Yankees and the Red Sox, that's another great series coming down the line right now. So, and, of course, college football, It's going to be pretty good. It's going to be right good right down the line right now. So we're pretty much involved in sports right now. But it's time for the Rays to have I still say Kevin Cash should be considered for manager of the year right now. And we can't forget about, for people living in the Tampa Bay area, Tampa Bay Lightning won a shootout thanks to Kucherov's goal in the shootout over the Florida Panthers. Now, Frank, you have to win games in October. Then you have to win them in March. I don't care. You take 1 or 2 points. Now you got a Carolina team coming in with Jeff Skinner tomorrow night. Columbus coming Saturday night with our former head coach John Tortorella. I mean, you got to win these games at home. You'd be 3-0. Then you go up, start a little road trip up there. You got to win these games. And I know the game you and Don have circled for, the December 27th Flyers and Lightning during the Christmas week, so probably you'll be all set credential-wise for that. So I got to – and those tickets will be in the mail tomorrow. I'll text you the dates and everything that way. Or you can text me the dates, the accurate stuff there. Well, a lot of things going on in the world of sports, like your input. Let's have your input of what's going on in the world of sports right now. And this, like Frank said before, when you're on the road, please do not – text or drink and drive this holiday season. We want you back for 2019 listening to Sports Tonight and all our fun on a Wednesday night. So we want you back in that. But it's going to be a real good week of sports coming up. Monday night, the game, Atlanta's hosting the Buccaneers now. They're saying, which Buccaneer team is going to show up? I mean, here we go again. I mean, Fitzsimmons did his job for the first 4 games, okay? Now, this is Jameis' team. Jameson better wake up and smell the coffee. They better play good defense. Is getting is getting lit up again like a Christmas tree again. I mean, there was no pass rush. You get the fireworks guy from the Jets. He's no pass rush. And then, right. Putting pressure on McCoy. And, Jerry McCoy's not having a good year. And you get the guy from the Eagles, double team. And then JP, whatever, as I call him, the fireworks guy, is getting double team, triple team, not to the quarterback at all. And how can you let the Bears score 48 points on your defense? That's pitiful. And the Falcons are going to be playing, Matt Ryan and the Falcons. I mean, that's going to be another loss for the Bucs. Their defense got to do something. And there's pressure on the defensive coordinator. He's the head coach for the Falcons, Rogers' buddy. There's pressure right there, Frank. I mean, and that guy would have been in Philadelphia, he would have had his head chopped off right now.
Sure.
I mean, sure. I saw Roy on the Spectrum Sports last night. He was cutting down Mike Smith. I mean, good for Roy to cut down and have a stand-upper. And Todd Wright, the goober that he is, he starts saying, well, I think so, Roy. I don't think you're right about that. So, oh, geez almighty. But that's why we have our show and they have their show. And our show is 100% better. Frank, I got to tell you a story. This is before Bright House became Bright House, right? So Roxanne Rauer did a show. She wanted me to come on to talk Lightning stuff. So I said this to our organization. I said, you want me to talk Lightning stuff?
Can you hear me, Tommy?
Right.
Yeah, we can.
Yes, hey, Don. What's the welcome? Yes, Don.
Okay.
Yeah, welcome
we
aboard,
had a
Don.
Phone problem there.
Oh, no. Well, Don, what's the reaction in Philadelphia and New York with the football teams up there, football Giants and the Eagles?
Well, I'll tell you, this is a big game on Thursday night, tomorrow night, actually.
Wow.
Everybody's sort of sitting on the edge of their chair. The Giants lost one at the buzzer on Sunday, a 62-yard field goal was unbelievable. And the Eagles, of course, are in the same boat. So both teams are in a situation at this early in the season where they pretty much have to win. The Giants are 1-4. It's a little bit like Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay on Sunday is playing Atlanta. Atlanta's 1-4. Tampa Bay's 2-2. So there are four teams that, pretty much have to win in order to keep their season alive.
Right. I think Atlanta's going to chop up the Bucs like the Ginzu Knives because, I mean, that defense, you watch that defense and you watch the Bears game, Don, there's no defense at all. The secondary was bad. I mean, here it is. I mean, it was a bad football game. You throw it out, but what team's going to show up this week? I mean, hopefully the right team will show up.
The interesting thing this week, Tommy, to be honest with you, was the Monday night game because Breeze put it on another big show, and I congratulate him and the New Orleans Saints because, setting the all-time record, and he handled it so graciously during the course of the very brief ceremony during the game, and it was sort of fun to watch a guy that can humbly accept. Doing something above and beyond what everybody else has done.
Oh, my God. Drew Brees, Donnie, played in the Outback Bowl a long, long time ago. And I was sitting in the boxes talking to Mike Schultz about this. This kid's going to make a superstar in the NFL right there. He'd be a great quarterback. And, when I used to cover the Bucs, Drew Brees is so down to earth. He takes everything in stride. I mean, he's a gentleman and a scholar. He's just takes everything with stride. A congratulations goes out to Drew Brees and Carolina got lucky over the Giants. Oh, boy,
well,
they got lucky.
Well, they picked Culpepper ahead of them.
that pretty much
tells you the story right there. And it was just so nice to see his whole family on the sidelines. He took a moment and they did a big thing on the national news on Tuesday night. Because they had the mic open as he came over, and he talked to his kids and his wife and everything, and you could really hear what he had to say. They featured it on the newscast at 6:30 to 7, and it was really great to see. And other than dancing around and jumping up and down and all that kind, he did it like, hey, I've been there before.
Exactly. What scored those touchdowns this game this past season? He hands the ball to the official like, I've been here before. Let's get the game going. And
right,
these guys
right.
are put on these shenanigans of bowling right now and doing the Billy's White Shoes imitation right now. That is your job to score a touchdown and make a sack. That's your job to do that.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the Giants are in a little bit of a turmoil now. Beckham has decided to, you know, talk about his quarterback, talk about the plays that are being called, talk about, you know, and here they are 1-4. And, you know, he didn't have a bad game on Sunday. He threw a touchdown pass, which was very well conceived. And he also caught a nice ball in the end zone. So he threw for a touchdown.
Right.
But at the same time, they lost the game. So, you know,
exactly.
individual praise doesn't do you any good if you lose the game. You know, it's like you're behind 24-7, and you kick a field
exactly.
goal or something like that, and you take 2 minutes to jump up and down and run around in the end zone or do something else.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
Mm.
Frank, you got to have a comment about that because you work for so many different teams and so many different age brackets for such a long period of time. And, of course, the National Football League sanctioned it now, these demonstrations in the end zone, which I can't believe. Frank, what's your opinion?
Okay. Frank, I think we lost Frank. But, hey, Don, hang on. We got Mike ready to go. Mike, welcome to the program. How you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing fine. I think Frank's still there, though.
Yep,
okay,
I'm still
here. Okay, well. Okay.
You got to get a hearing. You have to put the batteries in that hearing aid, Tommy.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Well, let's just finish off that last question, and then we jump right in with Mike.
Sure.
Soccer. Just a comment. In fact, Mike should comment, too, because he's as much involved in, although soccer is a little bit different about the individual accolades that they like to take after they score a goal or after they do something. But we were talking about Drew Brees and how he handled it, setting the all-time record on Monday night and what happens elsewhere. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me, all this, you know, dancing around that they've been doing in the end zone, and they just keep it up and they keep it up and they keep it up.
Well, that's the social media look at me generation. They're doing this
right.
for likes on Instagram and stuff like that. There was a time last year where, you know, I don't mind it if the guys celebrate with their teammates. I think they should. Scoring a touchdown in the U.S. in the NFL is hard. All right. And there were some really good ones last year. I liked it when the guys scored the touchdown and they played hide and go seek or the curling or the bowling. I thought they were creative. It was funny. You know, it brought a little bit of levity to the league. You know, I think when it gets to the level of Chad Ochocinco and Terrell Owens and the stuff that they were doing, hiked cell phones, and jumping and pulling down their pants and doing obscene gestures and stuff like that, then
right.
you've gone a bridge too far. You know, I remember
what
Barry
it shows
said
you how ridiculous it is. You know, the Jet running back down, well, he had a great week last week. He ran for 226 yards. And right now he's doing an outstanding job football-wise, but he did that lewd demonstration in the end zone. And what do you know? He gets an advertisement. I mean, he's now, from that thing they did in the end zone, he's now being paid to do an advertisement. I mean, unbelievable.
Oh, it's unreal.
The only way that stops is when when the NFL started giving out unsportsmanlike conduct penalties and started fining them. You hit the guy.
I think they did, to be honest with you, Mike. I think in that case, you know, it was after the touchdown, and I do believe, I mean, I saw the game, but it's been a couple of weeks ago, but I do believe that they immediately called unsportsmanlike conduct. But then again, you see, to me, that's a ridiculous penalty because they call unsportsmanlike conduct, so they, you know, all they do in a situation like that is, you know, move the ball where they kick it in the end zone anyway. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Well, the other thing that you got to remember, though, is, look, those guys got to go back. They've got to deal with their teammates in practice. I know when I was playing, my coach always had a rule that if you got an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty of any sort for anything, it was a minimum of it was really rough punishment. If it was an unnecessary unsportsmanlike punishment penalty, then the punishment was worse. You know, they've got the kangaroo courts. I'm sure there was some discipline that was handed out for that.
Oh, right? Yeah, the league did discipline, but I mean, hey, let's be honest about it.
I'm not talking
so
about
they fine him $25,000 or they fine him $50,000. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't care. I mean, that's the way it
well,
is.
What I worry about more is what my coach is going to do to me and what my captains are going to do to me.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, let's get
that's
to your sport, because the MLS, in fact, Roger just sent me a big thing today that Philadelphia is going to host a major event next year. But more importantly, Philadelphia's
mm-hmm.
now got, what, a two-point they won again, so they got a two-point spread. Give us a little update on the MSL and what's going on.
All right, so we're getting into the final two games of the season. Philadelphia has clinched a playoff spot.
Right.
They will be, at this point, at a minimum, the 5 seed. They're sitting in the 4th spot right now. They are 2 points back of NYCFC. By nature of their 5-month win over Montreal, they jumped over Columbus. They're well within striking distance of their most points for a season and their highest win total for a season. So I know it sounds weird that a team that's got a points total in the 40s and may crack 50 would be having their best season ever, but yeah, this right now is the best season in Philadelphia human history. It says, I guess, a lot more about the history than the current situation.
And that really surprised
got,
you, Mike, didn't it? I mean, we talked a great deal last year. You were really disappointed not only with the play, but with the management. But now, give us a little update on how they were able to restructure and put themselves into the playoff in a good position in the playoffs that quickly.
Well, being a lower revenue team like the Philadelphia Union are, it's always a matter of finding the right pieces and then hoping the pieces come together. And last year they spent money on pieces like Jay Simpson, who they expected to come in and score goals for them, and he didn't. You know, this year they really didn't make any signings throughout the offseason. It was late into the beginning of the preseason when they brought in David Ackham, who was a big trade, having lost out on Chris Pontius go in free agency. They brought in David Ackham, who was one of the leading scorers from the wing position for Chicago Fire last year. To be honest, he has not played at all well, and I don't even think that he's getting minutes for the team anymore. They brought in Borg Dachau, whose name I'm still messing up, but yeah, he came in late in the season, towards the beginning of the season. They started off with C.J. Sapong. They've seen him hit to the wing. They discovered Corey Burke around the middle of the season, and it's really been the emergence of Corey Burke, who was a reserve player for Bethlehem Steel last year, that kind of put them on this run. He's enabled them to move C.J. Sapong out towards the wings, who's then using his aggressiveness to just both score and pass to Burke, who's knocked in the goals to the point where he's earned himself an international call-up this week to play for Jamaica. Bafa Pako, who was a waiver deadline pickup, a release pickup for the Union before last season, has become a reliable attacking midfielder to the point where he has earned his first call up to the U.S. men's national team since 2016. He's only ever made the team once. You know, they had the youngest defense in the MLS. That group around the Austin Trusty and Jack is the kicker for the Eagles, has emerged to the point where Austin Trusty is now ranked as one of the top 20 prospects under 20 in MLS.
Well, Mike, are you crediting the administration for bringing in these players, or is it the spending of money? Who are you crediting for making this kind of a differential between 17 and 18?
I think there is enough credit to go around to Ernie Stewart, who managed to get these guys in, but certainly Jim Curtin, who has made this work. I think a lot of it, though, is Curtin's reliance, perhaps for lack of better options, on the players that he's had. And I've always been a believer in players need to play consistently, to play well together, and young players especially need to play in order to develop. Because he didn't have options, he's been forced to go with a lot of these players, and over the course of the year, they benefited from it. Game time, they've learned and they've gotten better, and they've developed into one of the three hottest teams over the course of the last 10 games, one of the three hottest teams in MLS. The only teams right now that are doing as well as them are Atlanta, and I believe Seattle was, it might be New York now, but Atlanta is really the only team that has played better over since mid-June.
I was going to say, because Atlanta and the Bulls are, you know, they're pretty much in a tie. What is there, 1 point differential, I think, between the two, but they're, by point-wise, they're pretty much the class of the field.
The point-wise, they're the class of the field. It's going to come down to a two-horse race. Right now, last time I looked at the standings, the Red Bulls had the advantage based on wins, which is the first tiebreaker. And I would say even going into the playoffs, despite the great run that the Union are on, you have to look at Atlanta and the Red Bulls as the favorites to not only win the Eastern Conference, but perhaps the entire MLS Cup.
I've got the schedule. I mean, I've got the listings right in front of me. Both teams have won 20 games. Red Bulls have lost 7, whereas Atlanta has only lost 6. And as far as winning is concerned, they're both even at 20.
All right. So then, Red Bulls have a 1 point advantage.
No, I think Atlanta.
Or
has
I'm
one
sorry,
point
Atlanta.
Advantage.
Atlanta has a one. Atlanta should have a 1 point advantage. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Those two have been the class of the league. You know, I think they are the two best teams in an MLS. And although I think that Sporting KC and FC Dallas are both very solid teams and would be worthy competitors in the Western Conference Finals and in MLS Cup, I think the East is where the power is right now. And let's not forget, you know, New York City FC has been on a slow, steady decline, but they're still a good team. Columbus has been there or thereabouts, despite the fact that they've been dealing with a potential move to Austin at the end of the season and a lot of uncertainty there, and they've still managed to put together a really good campaign. We've talked about the Philadelphia Union surging, and let's not forget that Washington is still right there, I believe 2 points back of Montreal, with 3 games in hand over the Impact. If they win their games, not only will they jump over Montreal, they might well jump over Columbus as well. And that's a team that's just about hot at the Philadelphia Union. The only thing that the Union have over DC United right now is the fact that they are the one of only two teams to actually beat DC United in DC.
Interesting.
So,
Tommy,
I really like how the Union are playing right now.
Well, that's an interesting thought right now. When you think about these teams, or like Atlanta and everything else is going good. I think, Mike, right now, I think with the Union might surprise some people, because what do you play? You have to play your best ball for soccer toward the end of the year, and that's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. You get the momentum for the playoffs, and look at Philadelphia, look at Columbus right now. I mean, it's Washington playing the best soccer right now toward the end of the season. Look out! I mean, it's just, you know, soccer is like the late Bruce Bell said, any given Sunday. And look what happens. I mean, look what happens in the NFL.
They had,
Mike, give me a breakdown on the playoffs. What is the situation? First you get a home field, I guess, but is it one game? Is that it?
Well, it's the top the top six teams. So the first round will be the number three team will play the number six team
right
at home in a one-game playoff, and the number four team will play the number five team at home.
Okay.
The winner of those two advance to face the top two teams, and those, I guess you call them semifinals, are home-and-home, and the final is home-and-home. So if the Union can win home field advantage, they'll have a home playoff game, and if they win that, they'll be guaranteed at least another home playoff game. And the way they've been playing at home, the way they've been playing up out on the road, they have picked up more points on the road than any team in MLS, I believe, since the middle of July. So they've been playing well at home. They've been playing well on the road. I think outside of that 4-1 loss to Montreal at home, that would be really the only obnoxious blemish on their home record right now.
Yeah, that was two weeks ago, right? That's when we talked about They really took a dumper in that game.
But then they came out and they then went on the road and beat a Seattle team who hadn't lost in nine games, the longest winning streak this season, the longest in Seattle Sounders history. They went and they came back home and beat top of the Western Conference Kansas City with a reserve team because they were resting players for the U.S. Open final. They went out. They lost the U.S. Open finals, but they came back and rebounded. They picked up the draw at Columbus, the 4-1 win against Montreal. So I would say, or against Minnesota. So I would.
But Mike,
say
what has happened to Seattle? Because they were the dominant force for what, three consecutive years, and right now in the West, I mean, they're struggling a little bit. I mean, you go to Dallas, you go to Kansas City, you go to Los Angeles, you go to Portland, and then you get down to Seattle. I mean, and now there's not a big point differential, but still, they used to be the cream of the crop out West.
They got old. They got old. Clint Dempsey retired. The players got older. They've not been able to sustain the same level of play that made them back-to-back MLS Cup finalists and MLS champions 2 years ago. The grind of the season, the continuing the campaign, the CONCACAF Champions League has really taken it out of that team. And when Clint Dempsey retired, you lost a great leader. And even though he was nowhere near the peak of his powers, he was still a really creative, really influential MLS player who was capable of creating opportunities for the players around them. And I don't think they've been able to replace that. You've seen the same thing happen sort of to Toronto FC. This season has just been a disaster for them. You talk about how Seattle's languishing. They're at least still in the playoffs, right? They're 1 point out of fourth place with a game in hand on Portland. They look to be in the playoffs. Toronto is eliminated. Altidore, Bradley, Sebastian Giovinco, the guys who made them so successful last year, just have not been able to sustain that level. I think a lot of people, when we talk about MLS, forget just what a grind this season is to play 34 games in between May and the end of October, March, April, and the end of October, and just the sheer expanse of where you have to go to play these games. You're talking about going from Atlanta to Vancouver to New England to Southern California. It's not unusual for somebody to have a situation like the Philadelphia Union did, where you're playing in Philly on Saturday, and then you're up in Seattle on Wednesday, and you're back in Philadelphia on Saturday, and then you're down in Houston on the following Wednesday. That's a level of travel that you don't see in just about any league. Outside of Russia, you don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's always been the case in the National Hockey League, too. The teams in Vancouver, when you're out there, you got to travel – I mean, we're fortunate enough here. You got the Devils, the Rangers, the Flyers, you know. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Flyers just introduced their new, like the Philadelphia Fanatics. Philadelphia Fanatics. This thing looks a little bit like the Fanatic, to be honest with you, but.
Created by the same guy who did the Fanatic. That's why.
It was created by Davey Raymond.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I didn't realize that. I saw it on TV tonight. I said, "Man, that looks a lot like the Fanatic."
Mm-hmm.
It is supposed to be exactly what it is: a big Muppet with a Delco beard.
Mm-hmm. You seem to do a lot of the same tricks that Davey used to do too.
Right.
They've only played two games, right? They're 1-1, so they hadn't had a chance to demonstrate this. He went up on it. They had him tied to a circus act. They had him tied to a wire and lifted him up to the ceiling of the Wells Fargo Center. But you didn't actually see him do anything on the ice itself. They must have gotten the guy that's a skater to be the mascot. But you didn't see him skate. All you saw him was go up into the rafters on this wire.
I'm going to disagree with you. They have. If you watch last night's game, I don't think you can say that they actually played.
Well.
So we're going to say that they played. This is their second home game, but I think the operative word is whether or not they've actually played in all of them. Guys in orange and black were there. But the one thing I will talk about, you guys know this better than me, and I'm not going to try and compare. It really is comparing apples and oranges when you talk about this. But when you talk about your average hockey player is going to play how much of a 60-minute game?
Great question. That's a great question. I'm going to say 5 minutes, basically. That's your third and that's your fourth line, garbage line. That's your Chris Stegman line. When the Flyer, when the Lightning won the Cup, it was Chris Stegman's job was put the puck back and forth in the other zone, and that was just that's your fourth line. Now with the these kids right now so fast coming up and down the ice, a lot of youngsters right now for an NHL, it makes Mr. Stamkos the old veteran in this Lightning hockey club right now. So they played a good game. Sure, it's a 2-1 shootout over the Panthers last Saturday evening at the Amalie Arena. They play Carolina tomorrow night.
They don't play again for 2 days, right?
No, they're going to play Carolina tomorrow night. Then they play Columbus. They're going to play Columbus this coming Saturday night. So it'll be good to see John Tortorello again. Looking forward to seeing John and our Columbus team. Funny thing about John Tortorello, I don't know. I think I told Don and Frank the story. Never told Mike the story. Well, Mike, in the old days, you had to go out and get the tape recorders where the coach is going to say, and you go right back to the office and play that, right? So it was Bobby the Chief Taylor, Rick Peckham, and in the Torts' office. This is at Brandon with the practice facility. I said, John, you got a minute? He said, Tommy, get the 11F out of here. F. And guys, I was shaking my pants, right? I ran out of the building. Here comes John Tortorella. Tommy, get back here. He's the only kid to get back here. And I was never so scared in my life, but Torts was it wasn't a guts and determination. Torts said to the Flyers, Hitchcock, shut your yap, and he let all the attention to Torts and the players. And he got the one thing that, I mean, the Lightning always wanted, and everybody wanted in this area, including Phil Esposito, is a Stanley Cup championship in the South. Mm-hmm. And that was your whole mission right there. I mean, Atlanta had a hockey team, then a hockey team down there, L.A., the first expansion of the six, but he wanted a hockey team in Florida, winning the championship. Just like everybody's jealous. Now you go in the arena now, it's just, you don't see that many months. All jerseys are foreign jerseys. You see Lightning hockey and presence in that building. It was very impressive the other night for the home opener, guys. It's very impressive. But you see the guys are all fired up now, so which is good. Tampa, I think it's a – Tampa right now, I think the Lightning in Tampa Bay area, just like the Flyers were in 73, 74, guys. Exactly that same atmosphere in the 17,077, what Joe DePaulo used to say, that's Pennsylvania polka, when he said the Flyers would come on the ice, and now the Lightning comes on the ice and thunderstruck. It's the same sort of, you know, situation that, you know, the Lightning has took out, copied off the Flyers. But one thing to bear in that copy is Kate Smith. I'll end on that comment right there.
Well, Mike, you're close to Washington. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of the turnover between a coach that left and went to the Devils to a coach that won the Stanley Cup last year. And what's the atmosphere around in Washington at the moment?
Remember when Barry Trotz left and went to the Islanders,
caught
everybody a little bit by surprise. The kid that they brought in,
they didn't want to pay him in Washington.
They didn't want to pay him.
That's right.
And it was the best I can equate it to, and this will hit home for y'all, it reeked a lot of the Dirk Cutter, Lovie Smith situation, where you had a high paid coach. Now, Lovie, of course, did not win a Super Bowl before getting dismissed, but they had a high paid coach and an assistant who they really, really valued, and they ultimately chose the assistant over the head coach. It has not seemed to really affect, but the sample size is very, very small. We're 3-4 games into the season. Of course, anything other than a deep playoff run for the Washington Capitals following the success of last year, the turnover on the roster has been minimal. They found a way to keep most of the key pieces that got them to the Stanley Cup. You know, Kuznetsov's still here. Ovechkin's still here. Oshie's still here. You still got the goalkeeper. They still got the main pieces that got them to the Stanley Cup final. So the expectation amongst the fans is certainly that we should be there or thereabouts again this year. Even more so because they've gotten the jinx of the Stanley Cup and all the playoff failures off their back. We would expect that they played looser. Now, everybody's waiting to see how the prolonged party has affected them. Only Devontae Smith-Pelly came back to the training camp out of shape. Watching Ovechkin play, it's like I don't know what gear he has found, but he seems to have found another one. He's in great shape. He's playing great hockey right now. And they look like they're primed to have a good season and make a deep run. But we're 4 games into the season, right? You know, when you're 4 games into an 82-game season, you can't make heads or tails of what's going on.
Right.
I've seen too many teams start off slow and get hot. I've seen too many teams get hot and get slow.
Well, on the other side of the ledger, Mike, what about the Islanders? How do you think he'll fare coming into a whole new atmosphere with all new players? And, you know, how quickly do you think he can do something with that club?
I mean, he's got a great reputation as a coach. It is a club that he is familiar with. It is a club that's got talent. Unfortunately, it's a club that's got someone behind it right now because we don't know where they're going to be playing after this year. And I know it's, you know, this year versus next year, but I think some of that creeps into the locker room. He did a phenomenal job with taking the Caps to another level. We saw that in how he managed that Stanley Cup run last year, getting them as far. You know, the only team that they lost to the previous 2 years was the Penguins. There's no shame in losing to the eventual Stanley Cup champions. He finally got them past that one. I think that he's a good manager. He's a good coach with the players. We saw that kind of even how delicately he handled that goalkeeper situation last year.
Right.
And making sure he pulled all the right strings, he made all the right changes to get those guys in the position where they could win. You know, going back to the Capitals, though, one thing I forgot to talk about, and I have gotten your opinion because I don't know when the last time we talked about hockey was, Tom Wilson got smacked with a 20-game suspension. What do you guys think of that?
That's right. That's that's a bad big time.
That is. You don't see suspension like that very often.
Nope. Old-time hockey.
He only got three games in the playoffs. He got three games in the playoffs. I understand that they said this is the fourth suspension that he has had in the calendar year. But I don't understand how.
And also the severity of the injury. I think that had something to do with it too.
And that it was a preseason hit, and he's a repeat offender.
Given all that, I thought
they were going to come down in the 8 to 12 range. I didn't see 20. Now, it's highly possible that he goes through the arbitration process and they do knock it down to 12, but I don't understand where the 20 number came up with, unless you're really trying to make a statement that we want to take this out of the game, which is fine. I don't think hits like that should ever be allowed. That was a cheap stick to the hard hit to the head that could have possibly ended that guy's career.
Right.
I just hope that if the NFL, the NHL is going to make this statement, that they continue to make it so that the next time you see something like that, it's a 20-game suspension.
Well, I think what they're doing, Mike, I think they're taking the lead of what's happening in the National Football League. I mean, you can almost not touch a quarterback, especially from, you know, mid-chest up to his helmet. I mean, you know, they're really trying to protect it. I think in the National Hockey League, you know, there were so many years where they just let everything run wild, and I think they're trying to do the same thing. I think they're trying. You get up near the head or the face, you're gonna get yourself a suspension.
Okay, I could just see Dave Schultz back and playing hockey right now, and he'd be in the penalty box just stepping on the ice, probably all the infractions that Schultz would probably have.
The other thing, Mike, is that I thought the Islanders were committed to play at the Nassau Coliseum again. They were going to play a certain number of games this year at the Barclay, but they were also going to play a certain number of games at the Coliseum. And then I thought after this year, until they supposedly start to build this new one out by the racetrack, that they were going to go back and play at the at the Nassau Coliseum until they were ready. Is that wrong?
I know that's the plan, but the Nassau Coliseum isn't an arena that's going to get you big name players. You know, they left the Nassau Coliseum for a reason. I don't think that they've made the types of. I don't think you can renovate that place to get it up to where it would need to be.
They renovated it, but it's much smaller. I think it's only like 12,000 now.
Yeah. And when we talk about that, you know, if you don't have a home and you're talking about you're playing some of your games in Barclays, some of your games in Long Island, you're going to be playing in Long Island, even with the renovations, I still don't think it's going to be a top caliber arena. It would take a while, ways to get that there. I think it's like telling the Redskins that after they leave FedEx, they've got to go play in RFK.
That's right.
You can't play a good intramural game at RFK.
That's what I'm saying. You know, like, where is, you know, clearly he is a coach who players want to play for, but how long is the leash going to be? You know, they were a competitive team last year. They were a young, up-and-coming team last year. Are they going to be able to get the pieces that they need to make them into the caliber of team that one would expect that Barry Trotz would coach, which would be something like the Caps were this year? Are you going to be able to get the Oshie to want to go and play there, knowing that this is the situation? Are you going to get these top-end free agents or even, you know, the solid middle-of-the-pack guys that you need when you know they have other options if this is the situation that you got? My instincts, and I will admit if I'm wrong, is that no, it's going to hamper them for a while. I would expect that they'll be there or thereabouts in the playoffs, but I think it's going to be a couple of years before you see what they're really capable of. And the question is Barry Trotz going to be there to deliver them to the promised land?
Mike, that's a great question.
You're talking about the severity of the penalty in the National Hockey League, which I think, you know, I agree with you. I think it may be altered as they make their presentation, but I think it's going to stay up there pretty high. I don't think they're going to step back too far. But we talked last week.
I would say 12.
Yeah.
I would say 12.
We talked last weekend about severity and you didn't want to talk too much. You wanted to wait and see what happened in the courts. Because you got a frontline major soccer player who's really gotten himself into a hot water, and looks like he's going to really have some problems.
Yeah, this is not going well. Already the allegations have been enough to lose sponsorships, and he has been invited not to play for Portugal for the remainder of the year.
Right.
You know, he still is playing for Juventus because when you have invested that much money in the player, I mean, I've told you on multiple occasions, he's actually being paid more to play for Juventus than the stadium that he played in, than they paid to build the stadium that he plays in. They've kind of got him to get him out there. But apparently there is enough in the allegations that people are starting to get squeamish.
Right.
We're going to see where the investigation goes, but from what I've read, you know, it's not good. It's certainly not good. It comes down to do you believe that he is capable of this? And this may be one of those instances where his public persona has tinted the court of public opinion. Because of his on-field antics, because of the pimping and the preening that he does when he plays, people feel like, hey, he's kind of that guy who could do something like that. I could see him doing this. And certainly in the court of public opinion, which matters if you're doing endorsements, which matters if call-ups for international teams, it's harming him. And as this investigation takes shape, we'll continue to see, but he's certainly paying a cost right now. You know, you don't see the same Nike ads with him. EA Sports took him off the cover of FIFA 2019. You know, these are things that you don't do if you feel comfortable that this is groundless.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy?
It's the same thing that way. You know, soccer is such a world popular sport. And the guy does a foolish thing like that, he should be out of the league up there. But that's the way I look at it. What you think about hockey right now? I mean, it's just starting off right now. And you know, you say not going to New York. And, Mike, I got to disagree with you for this point. People 18, 19 years old, and you say they get drafted by a New York Islander team. I mean, the kid's going to take it in a heartbeat. Compare that to the drafting for the Nashville Predators and Florida Panthers. They're going to say, playing hockey in New York, playing hockey in New York, they watch the Islanders for all those years, winning the Cups, and that's what these young players want to go for right now, playing hockey in with the Islanders in the Big Apple. I mean, that's in the Northeast right now. They'd rather play there than go down to the Panthers and play. No, nothing against the Panthers, but
I'm chuckling to myself because I can imagine the poor 19-year-old from Edmonton
who
gets drafted by the New York Islanders and dreams of playing in Manhattan only to find out that he's got to play at the Nassau Coliseum.
Thank you.
Two things, Mike. One is the young college coach who's now taking over the Rangers, which has gotten off to a very shaky start. They got a lot of young players getting off to a shaky start. And the other thing is, how do you think Vegas is going to do this second year? Do you think they're going to – I mean, they had such a unbelievable – there's never been an expansion team that's done anything like they did. And, of course, the city went crazy at the same time. I mean, tickets out there for the playoffs were astronomical in price. But can they do it again? Do they have – you know, they had goaltenders that were older but had – really rejuvenated themselves out there. So those two questions. What do you think about Vegas, and what do you think about the young man coming in to coach the Rangers? Because right out of college,
Don, I can answer that question about Vegas. You know, they got George McPhee out there. He was his coach. He was the GM of Washington. He brought Ovechkin right there, okay? And now he's good judge of hockey talent. I think it's too much pressure, Mike. You have to agree with me, that coach in there, college coach in the Rangers. The Flyers got one, and, you know, they hexed up. The Flyers got one, and so the Lightning got one, too, John Cooper. But you put yourself in the Big Apple. The spotlight's on the Rangers. You're in the six teams. I think you should have waited back in the minor leagues for a little bit up there. So that's my point of view. Mike, hey, thanks for coming on again, talking soccer and hockey. Hope to talk to you next week, Mike.
Sure thing, guys. You guys have a good week. I'll talk
to you
next Wednesday.
Don't forget to congratulate Mike. He got married this Saturday.
Oh, that's right.
Yes,
congratulations, Mike. Oh,
we talked about that last week. Well, I understand that we're 250 yes. at the reception.
Not that many. But I don't.
Oh, come on now. 1,000, Mike. Come on, 1,000. Not like my wedding, like there.
There was a
congratulations,
Joe.
All the best.
All right. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right,
our
you
next guest
a
is a good friend of mine. Our next guest is a good friend of mine, a good friend of the program, who actually did attend my wedding, Mr. Mike Schultz. And Mike, good evening, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, doing great, guys. Good to be on with you.
Mike,
oh, it's fantastic.
The college football is just so interesting to watch. I mean, every single week, just a lot of fun games to talk about. Which one would you like to pick out this week that you had a chance to really focus in on it? Maybe it was a surprise or maybe not.
Well, you know, I think there were some big games this past week in regards to, you know, big for the programs, you know, who played them certainly. You know, obviously, I think, you know, the Northwestern win over Michigan State was huge for them. I knew they were a much better team than what they had shown so far, but and certainly they went on the road and won a really important game. You know, Florida beating LSU, of course, was a big step forward in Florida's attempt to you know get back into the you know the competitive nature of what they're used to. And so and you know just you know Auburn's loss, of course, was a interesting game too. So I would say
that was a shocker. That was a shocker.
There were some shockers, but also I think you know what you're seeing now is you know as we're getting into league play here, you know that there's you know a lot of parity out there. I mean, you know the SEC I think has nine teams that have at least four wins. You know six games in the season, and it's you know anybody's you know game out there right now, right, in the SEC on both the East and the West divisions this year. So a lot of competitiveness there, a lot of parity, if you will, I think, for the most part. You know, even if you were to set aside Alabama maybe and Georgia right now, but you know, who's to say? I mean, they both have got some big games to play yet, so it's going to be an interesting rest of the way here you know with
right.
the season. The Big Ten, some in really big games this weekend. Wisconsin.
Oh, before you get to this weekend, Michigan?
Oh, okay.
Mr. Harbaugh had another scare.
Yep. Yeah, he did. But they took care of business and ended up on top, and they're doing pretty good. So
right.
You know, they I think they what's shown so far with them this year, like we talked about at the beginning of the season. You know, that quarterback coming over from Ole Miss has really, fixed a weak spot that they had last year where they had to basically patch together their quarterback situation the whole season last year between injuries and just not, you know, getting production. They used three different quarterbacks last year. And, you know, this year they were able to, you know, have this transfer come in, and he's really stepped in and helped out that situation. And their defense is just as good as, if not better than they were last year, as one of the top defenses. And it's keeping them in games. And, you know, with the quarterback situation a little more solid this year, they're they're winning more than they're losing this year, and they're looking pretty good. So it's going to be interesting the rest of the way with those guys as well.
And we talked early in the season about Mississippi State. They had a couple of disappointing losses, but at the same time, I root for that young man because he was over. Not only was he an assistant at Penn State, but he was also at Fordham. So I keep tabs on Fordham a little bit. So I wish him well. And we talked about it at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
He had a big win.
Yeah, I think we talked about the fact that one of the things we talked about was of all the new coaches in the SEC, he probably came in with the best situation in regards to what he had coming back, and
exactly.
And they have a good team. And you're right, there were a couple of games earlier in the year which I think they expected to do better in, and they struggled in a little bit. But part of that is other teams getting better too, right? You know. That maybe we didn't expect, like Kentucky, is out there. So at the same time, they had a really big win this past week, and they're right there in the hunt. Like I said, there's nine teams that are, 4-2 or better right now.
Right.
It's anybody's game right now.
Tommy?
Oh, that's for sure. Mike, how can people get tickets for the Outback Bowl and be a sponsor of this great event for New Year's Day.
Well, thanks, Tommy. Tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster. So Ticketmaster.com is really the best place to go for your tickets for the bowl game. We do have some premium seats available through the bowl office. You can find out more information about that in our membership program at our website at OutbackBowl.com. But yeah, people are buying tickets. We have a lot of people who buy tickets every year to the game. Doesn't matter who's in the game. They just want to go out and have a great time and see some great college football on New Year's Day and kick off the year the right way. So definitely encourage everybody to do that.
How many years is this for you, Mike?
This is my 30th year on staff with the game, actually. So
wow.
Yeah, so
well, if we're baseball, you throw out the first ball. What are you going to do with it?
I guess
the
right, yeah.
That's right. You should have kicked the first field goal. Have you and Jim kicked the first field goal that way?
Yeah, I'm going to probably do that now. So.
No, don't get that. I can kick one down in indoor soccer.
It's a great event. You guys, of all the bowl games that I've ever been to, and there have been a lot of them, the preparation you put in, what you do with the teams while they're, in the Tampa area, whether it's in Clearwater, whether it's in Tampa, the things that you do, not only for the fans, and not only the fact that the Outback Bowl does such a great job, it's a sort of a job of love.
Yeah, well, it really is. It's a labor of love, I was speaking to a class over at University of Central Florida last night, actually, and they talked about the success and just sort of the job and all that. I said, I've been doing this 30 years, but over the course of that 30 years, the entire bowl landscape has changed a lot. My job has changed a lot just in regards to different things that we do now versus what we used to do. And the new technologies. I mean, back when I started with the bowl game, we didn't have nobody had websites, nobody had social media. I mean, a lot of things now that I am in charge of that didn't even exist back then. But
the fact is, you said a couple of weeks ago, you can see every game. You don't have to send people out. All you have to do is turn your bank of TV sets on, and you can see every team, every game.
Exactly. So a lot of differences there. But at the same time, the one thing that hasn't changed that's really one of my favorite parts of working for a bowl game is the different schools that come in, the different fan bases with their different traditions and so forth. But, making sure to do as much as you can, basically everything possible, to make sure that the players, the coaches, their families, the fans, the alumni, that everybody in the media, that they have a great, great experience and one that they'll remember for many, many years to come. And you know, when you have different groups of people come in like that, it's sort of like, you know, playing the ultimate host, right? You bring in people that from different, you know, walks of life, to different traditions, different schools, different parts of the country, and, you know, just showing them a great, great time in the Tampa Bay area and around the bowl game, and, you know, hoping that they go away with an experience that they'll always remember. And that's really and every year it's unique, right, with the different fan bases and so forth. So
yeah.
That's the part that's really my favorite part, and what really makes it, you know, like you said, labor of love.
Tommy?
Mike, that's why you are a legend, and in Tampa Bay, you, Jim, and Jerry are legends for the Bulls throughout the country. And it's been an honor for working for you, God, the last 30 years, friendship and working with you guys the last 30 years. I can't wait for that game to come on New Year's Day. What better way to spend a New Year's morning going to a college football game on New Year's Day? And I've seen it all the 30 years. It's an honor and a pleasure to be over that New Year's Day.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it is a lot of fun. And it's, like you said, it's a great, great way to kick off the new year. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun. You get to see some great, great football, some great players. We've had over 900 players play in our game that have gone on to the NFL. We've had many coaches who have won national championships. We've had, you know, and just the experiences of some of the games. We've had some just tremendous ball games, and like you said, just the whole atmosphere. It's just a lot of fun. So it's something that we certainly thoroughly enjoy doing, and hope to be doing as long as we can.
Mike, I sort of backed you up a little bit. You wanted to talk about this week's games, and I got it going back over this last week's games.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's some really big games this week. I mean, you know, Georgia LSU is going to be a very big game, of course. You know, LSU coming off of a very heartbreaking loss to Florida last week, and you know, but they're going to be ready, you know, for Georgia to come in there. Wisconsin, you know, goes into to Michigan this week. Very, very important game for both of those schools in regards to not only the conference race, but also just, you know, their bowl positioning or playoff positioning down the road. You know, Michigan State, after dropping the game to Northwestern last week, they're really in a situation where, and of course they lost early in the year. So they're playing Penn State, and, you know, Penn State's coming off of a really tough loss to Ohio State. So both teams, you know, are sort of probably feeling like they're up against the wall a little bit, and really need this victory. So, you know, those are going to be some really, really, I think, big, big games for those teams. And thus, I think they're going to be really, really great games to watch and follow this week. So a lot of stuff going on every week. You know, the pressure gets more and more on these schools, and the games seem to get better and better.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you. Thank you for your time again.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Look forward to it, Mike.
It's
always great to talk about what's coming up. So we'll check with you next week.
God bless. Thank you for your time.
Take care, guys.
Take care. But, Don, this is your favorite part right now. We have a local golf pro. Doug's come on, Doug. Welcome aboard,
that's
sir.
Great. We got a little time to talk with Doug today, which is terrific. There are a couple of things on the golf front before we talk about the Ravens or whatever. This thing with Furyk is not going to die. I mean, he did an interview and talked about what had happened and the selections and the pairings and so forth this week. I think it was on ESPN. I'm not sure, but I believe it was ESPN. And so that story is not going to die. That's going to continue. No. That's going to continue on. Your thoughts on whether, you know, he said everybody knew exactly who they were playing with, what the teams were going to be, and that there was no reason for anybody to second guess.
Well, it's always easy to second guess after, you know, the cards have been played. You know, I think that there's multiple publications. I just got a Golf Week magazine in mail, and they were talking about you know, some different things with regard to the selection committee, if you will, and how they go about, you know, vetting the players and those sorts of things.
Right. Things
there was,
like
there
what?
Was even, well, there was even a story that Brooks Koepka got in a fight with somebody in the locker
right.
in the player's room or whatever. I mean, there's clearly a lot of unrest with regard to how this process came about in terms of who was picked and who made the team. I mean, think about, you know, Bubba Watson qualified for the team based on his play throughout the year. Well, he couldn't find the club face, you know, when he played. So, I mean, I guess it's always easy to second guess these guys and the pairings and, you know, those sorts of things. I think at the end of the day, I mean, you know, Azinger faced some of the same scrutiny with his teams that he had. And you know, it's difficult to pair a lot of these guys that are ego-laden together. I mean, you know, that, you know, when we talked about Tiger and Phil playing that one year, they were the top two players in the world. And they couldn't gel in that format. And, I mean, it's been proven over the years the United States isn't a very good team, if you will, in terms of those morning and afternoon matches the first 2 days. The better ball, they're okay in. The foursomes, they've never really been good at. And to play a foreign golf course that's set up for that European team style, I mean, they were up against it, you know. So I don't know how they go back to the drawing board and make changes in how they pick their teams or their players, rather. But they need to do something different.
Well, some of the folks that don't follow golf so well, you talked about Koepka, maybe a little disagreement in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
But he also was got a reward yesterday because he was selected the player of the year. Of course,
yeah.
He won the two big tournaments. So he got a little rose on the cherry this week.
That's right.
Well, I mean, it's easy to sit there and say, if you look at the world rankings, the United States, obviously, I think, you know, they're dominating a lot of those positions and have some of the best players in the world. And I've always said this, you know, whether it's, you know, we talked about the United States team not making the World Cup. We've talked about the Olympic, you know, situations where, I mean, I feel like the United States of America has the best athletes on the planet, no matter what, you know, sport or whatever you're talking about. And I just don't understand why they can't. But, you know, play well and win in these competitions. So it doesn't make sense to me.
Tommy?
Probably pressure right there. Hey, Don, could you imagine these foreign players? You know, we would take them to Cobbs Creek and Karakong, or 36 hole, the Deluxe Resort. Could you imagine what the conditions there would be? They'd be cussing up and down the Philadelphia Fairmont Park Association, could Karakong and Cobbs Creek up there. So, but that was good. But I think I think you're right about that. It's just going to be great. Golf was great this year. But, Doug, I have to say, I hate to say it, but the Browns beat the Ravens in overtime. We're 2-2-1. You guys are 2-3. I have to say, Doug, I'm sorry.
Well,
you said all last year the Browns lost again.
Well, I would tell you, Tommy, that my mom is nice enough. My mom is nice enough that lately she's been making me certain foods. And after the Raven loss, I believe she baked me a humble pie that I just had a piece of the other night.
I didn't see any of that game. Tell me how that could have turned out to be a 9-6 game.
Oh
my
God.
Ugly. It was disgusting. It was such a poor display. You know, the Ravens couldn't run the ball. They made a couple key turnovers. Couldn't score a touchdown. I will tell you this, that in years past, obviously, the Cleveland Browns have been the laughingstock of the NFL. But recently, obviously, with some of the additions in free agency and obviously the draft, they've gotten a lot better. The Browns are a decent football team. And to play them at home, the Ravens going on the road, the Browns played a good defensive football game and should be credited with a good game and a win. The good news for the Ravens is that they've played all three of their division opponents on the road already, and they get all three of those guys
right.
at home coming up. And they beat Pittsburgh on the road. So my hope is that they can mm-hmm. figure something out offensively. You know, I don't know. They haven't been able to really run the football with any – effectiveness. I mean, Justin Tucker got a field goal blocked, which never happens. We've seen Sam Cook get a punt blocked already this year. You know, it's kind of disheartening because we know that Coach Harbaugh was a special teams coach, and that they were a little lacking in some of those areas over the course of the first five football games. So defensively, they look decent. I think their secondary is pretty solid. Their linebacking core and defensive line have played well. I mean, they haven't really given up a whole lot of points thus far. So, I mean, there's reason for Baltimore fans to hope if their offense can get back on track here. And they've showed that in a couple of their games in Pittsburgh and then obviously in Buffalo when they played that first game, scoring a lot of points. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if Joe Flacco can throw to the right team this week.
Yes. Hey, Doug, I got a question for you. Doug. I was wondering what Art Modell's thinking about that loss to his new Browns. And what size of Newsom think every time he goes back to Cleveland and loses to the new Browns in Cleveland?
Right. You know, I mean, obviously there's many rivalries within the rivalries that already are current. I mean, the Ravens and the Steelers is a fantastic rivalry, but that whole division, all those games are super important, and the unspoken rivalry between Baltimore and Cleveland with regard to the Browns and the Ravens and how they came about and those sorts of things. You know, those players know kind of what's going on, and there's
also
a lot of pride.
A little bit with
those.
Is there also a little bit with Cincinnati? I mean,
absolutely. Right. I mean, Marvin Lewis was a defensive coordinator the year they won the Super Bowl, and a fabulous coach. I actually met him on several occasions. Super nice guy. But don't think that when they play the Cincinnati Bengals that there's not a little something extra on the line. And that's the way it is in those division games because they mean so much. And those are physical football games. Those are hard-nosed kind of special teams turnover, every yard counts kind of games that mean something for all those guys that they circle on their schedule each year.
Come back to Gal for just a second. Maybe your comment. I just happen to think the last 3 months of the tour this year, I think Molinari was as good a player as I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, he is just so consistent and so good. That if I had to single out one player, he would be the guy I'd like to have on my side.
Well, it's been well documented that the European side have much better ball strikers than that of the United States, or so it was discussed in several of the publications. And Don, one of the things I did read was, for some reason, this season carried on longer, and I think that guys like Tiger Woods, after winning, and Phil Mickelson, and some of the veterans were a little winded after the season. It came to pass that the next time they play the Ryder Cup, that the season will end sooner than it did this year, and hopefully give some of those guys more of a resting period in between.
I did not see that.
That was something I think I read in that Golf Week that they were discussing. And obviously the selection committee and as we discussed, the vetting of those players or the qualifications of the coaches, they play their season and automatically qualify. I don't know. There's something that needs to happen there. Maybe they need more captain's picks or something to get some of those players that are playing well down the stretch involved or what have you. I'm not certain, but But I think they have to come up with a different blueprint.
I'll tell you one thing: they better find some type of an excitement for the match play. who's going to watch it now? I mean, Tiger went in the doghouse, and Mickelson hasn't been able to do anything since the very early part of the year. I mean, holy smokes! With this $1 million match, is going to be nothing.
I would also draw your attention to how many players over the course of, say, Major League Baseball in the playoffs have defined their career with a great playoff run. And so my point is that, you know, when you're in that Ryder Cup and all that pressure and for your country and all that stuff is on the line, you know, only one of those two teams can step up and seize that. And obviously the European team did. You know, so so I think there's a bit of a parallel between when the bright lights are shining, who can step up and and secure that versus those that can't. So, many a Major League Baseball player, or even look at the season the Ravens won the Super Bowl last, where Joe Flacco was amazing,
right?
And that's how he got that enormous contract. I mean, he didn't play like that all year. He did it in the playoffs. So these things yep. happen when we get into postseason and people step up.
Tommy?
Any given Sunday. Hey, Frank, do we have Roger on? Is Roger with us
yes,
today?
Yes, we do. Yes, he is.
Hey, Roger, welcome
Tommy
aboard.
Taking it all in. Take
it aboard, Roger. Your turn. Take it aboard.
I didn't hear a word from Roger. Where's he been?
Yeah, he's been sleeping.
Fucking traffic on 95.
Oh, dear.
No, go ahead. I mean, I'm learning a lot as always. About golf. Oh my God! I can't see the it's rough, and the crazies are out here in the construction zone.
Roger, my question to you is: as you know, I can't pick up WIP and so forth, so I don't hear the Philadelphia talk shows. But tomorrow night to me is one gigantic night. The Giants are 1-4. The Eagles are 2-2. They're two teams, and same thing in Tampa. This game coming up in Tampa between Atlanta, they're 1-4. Tampa's 2-2. Two very big games.
Oh, it is, and everybody's saying the same thing. And this is a must-win for the Eagles, okay? Because and they lost Joseph Addai, for the season. He's gone. So they're really short on a running back.
Right.
And but now they've got issues. They are not as good a team as they were last year. And I think one of the big factors that's missing is LeGarrette Blount. I really do. I was sorry to see them let him go, but they thought that they'd have the running back situation covered. Obviously, they did not. And with injuries, I mean, that's what's going to happen. You never know.
Well, I just think tomorrow night's game's got to be a terrific game. It's in conference, and it's a game of the Giants. I mean, they blew it. I shouldn't say they blew the game. I mean, 62-yard field goal. You're not blowing the game with a 62-yard field goal. I take my chances with that every day.
Well, that's right. And last year they lost to the Eagles, I think, with a 61-yarder.
Exactly. Is that game, Roger? Roger, that was the hottest game on record in Philadelphia. It was 95 degrees. That kicks the game-winning field goal. It's lifted the game, courtesy of our sponsor. That kicks the winning field goal. Like, oh, my God, this is unreal. The place where Paninotti, by the time everybody got out of there, the stadium up there is such a great thing up there. So, I mean, isn't it ironic the Giants lose to a 62-yard field goal and a 61-yard field goal within a year? Totally amazing in the NFL.
You know, I'll tell you what, I have to give out kudos to Drew Brees for setting the all-time record. I mean, I'm not a Saints fan, but I'll tell you what, I give him a lot of credit. He's one heck of a guy in a class act.
Roger, we talked about that at the outset of the show. I thought the best part of that whole thing was, I don't know if you had a chance to see whether you were working or whether you had a chance to see the game, and Doug the same way. I mean, they kept the mic right on him. But how about the way he accepted the fact that he had just set the record and went over to his family, no hijinks, just went over and told his kids, you just go out, you can do anything if you work for it. I mean, I thought it was terrific. I mean, just magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree. And the other thing was, I thought it was interesting. He presented the football to David Baker, who's the president of the Hall of Fame now. And
that's right.
I know that Doug knows this. We used to have, RG and I used to have breakfast with them on Monday mornings at Einstein's because his son, Sam Baker, that was the first-round pick along with Matt Ryan on the Falcons, and Sam Baker is the starting left tackle out of USC. But the injuries shortened his career. But Dave Baker's a great guy. Boy, he has really taken that Hall of Fame to new heights with the community, the housing being built out there and everything. I mean, it's unbelievable. But I also noticed that Dave had white gloves on. So there's no chance of any DNA of his getting on that football.
That's right. That's right. But Dave Baker did a great job in the NFL.
I just thought the whole thing was terrific, the way it unfolded, and of course, you know, for him to have a great game, great game to boot was really great. And to me, I mean, that was one of the highlights, or is going to be one of the highlights of the entire 18 season for me. I just think that anytime somebody handles themselves like that in a pressure situation, and not only the way he played, but the way he accepted it, to me, that's the way life should be.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the Yankee fans are in mourning today. I know that, but you know, they gave it a shot. And how often do you ever see a one-sided game like the night before, like two nights ago, in a playoff situation? I can't remember any in recent time. I may be wrong. I don't know whether Doug, you're a real baseball fan. Do you remember anything like that?
Not in the playoffs.
I want to draw Don's attention to something that, you know, I mean, how often when we watch sports do we want to see a 300 game winner, you know, pitch and win that 300 game, or, you know, the 500th home run or the 3,000th hit? I mean, think about the NFL this year with all the Tom Brady's and Drew Brees, and I mean, think about Phillip Rivers and Matt Ryan and all these guys that are setting all these records and continuing to Ben Roethlisberger accumulate yardages and touchdowns and all that, and how great and healthy, you know, statistically that the NFL is this year.
Yeah, the ratings have certainly proven that out, Doug. There's no question about that. The Monday night ratings this last week with Brees were like, I can't remember now, like 27% compared to the same Monday night a year ago.
I mean,
and
I think there are a lot of things
that they pointed out in the article. The fact that they now play the national anthem with nobody out there, and they don't have to go through all that controversy and hullabaloo, and plus the fact that the games have been so much better, the competition has been so much better, the ratings have really reflected what's going on in the National Football League.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, think about Drew Brees. I mean, obviously, you know, coming off of that significant shoulder injury when he left the Chargers. I mean, did anybody think that he would be where he is now as a under 6 foot quarterback?
No.
I mean, come on.
You know what, Doug? What's interesting? I brought this up a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Bill Savage, I know who it was. It was Charlie Weiss that brought it up on Sirius XM NFL Radio. He was saying that Nick Saban wanted the Dolphins to sign Drew Brees, you know, after surgery and everything, and they wouldn't do it, okay?
Right.
But just think, if they had done it, Nick Saban may still be coaching the Dolphins.
Right,
and
true.
Imagine what it would be like, the Dolphins and Saban and Belichick and the Patriots. Twice a year.
Not only that, Roger, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, Culpepper was drafted before Brees.
I think you're right.
That's right. I see Drew Brees. Yeah, I see Drew Brees for the offback ball down.
The undersized, right, Tommy? Because of his height and lack of height.
Right, exactly. Now look at him now. It tells you one thing, guys. Age. I mean, height does not make a difference. Guts, determination, look at number 16 for the Philadelphia Flyers. And we all take that example in our lives for what he did for the Flyers. Bobby Clark, diabetic. You know, when Clarky went, the Flyers went. And you base your life for what he did. The great accomplishment.
Yeah, but he also had
a
double whammy because he had diabetes. That was why they wouldn't draft him. and the Flyers took the chance and came up. But going back to Doug's point, the one thing I think we have to realize too, Doug, is that the game has changed so much now. I mean, first of all, these defensive secondary people have no chance. I mean, you know, to throw for 300 yards a game is almost nothing. You know, because the defensive players have no shot.
Exactly.
Well, you know, Don, the interesting thing for me is Drew Brees is obviously a Hall of Fame quarterback. Is there a Hall of Fame wide receiver that he threw to?
Oh, good question.
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
The tight end? Probably not. So who the heck was catching 70,000 yards worth of passes? Right?
Well,
Doug, how about the tight end play? The tight end's play for him,
well,
I guess.
Jimmy Graham, maybe, but I mean, you know.
I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, though, Jimmy Graham.
Probably not.
No, I agree. I can't. Nothing comes up right off the top of my head. Obviously, we don't see them play as much as other people do, but right off the top of my head, I cannot name a guy that I would say
thank
is a Hall of Famer that they played with him.
And obviously, LaDainian Tomlinson, when he was in San Diego.
Hey, Doug, and guys, can we hold on that thought? Frank just gave me tick, tick, tock right up my tick, tick, tock. So can we hold on that thought, guys, till next week?
Yep.
Okay, gentlemen. Nice work again, Frank. You got things rolling, and Roger, and just be careful on 95, Roger. Take care.
Yes, Roger, be careful. God bless everyone. God bless everyone. God bless everyone. Yes, okay, great, great. I'd like to thank always our sponsor, Bradford Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. Purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. And for people in the Tampa Bay area, Lightning versus Carolina, 7:30 tomorrow night. Columbus at 7 o'clock, 813-301-6600. Frank, great job as always. Could you text me your address for those Outback Bowl event things?
Sure.
All right, thank you, Frank. Great show. Okay. Right there. Bye-bye now.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and see somebody in uniform, please let them know that you know they're there. A simple handshake, a wink, or anything you can do would be greatly appreciated. The best thing you can do is say, be safe, my brother and my sister. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Culcap, Sergeant Thomas Bainger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Nafu Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longville K Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Police Officer Matthew Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department, and Deputy Sheriff Clay Zerba, County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the middle in the palm of his hand. Good night and God bless.
Shem alek ma yelama Shake my head, I hear my soul, I shake my heart, I could get my head, my
All units be advised, 1999 responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.